Hello, rural America. Welcome to this weekend edition of Haynes at the Reins from the Independent Ag Network. I'm Rick Haynes. We have ag news, market information, business news, weather for the West, the Rodeo Roadshow, commentary, and Cowboy Church all coming your way. So let's get started, shall we?
When voters decided from the United Kingdom to leave the European Union, it threw these markets into a maelstrom of some kind, not just the commodity markets. We're talking financials and everything. Here with us this weekend to discuss what happens with the meat trade from the U.S. Meat Export Federation is their economist, Aaron Bohr. Aaron, first of all, welcome to the program, and could we talk just a little bit about your expertise with this meat deal, please?
Okay, sure. Thanks, Rick. Well, I've been economist for the U.S. Meat Export Federation for 10 years this summer, so spend basically all of my time looking at the international meat trade flows and just trying to constantly, you know, get a handle on all the dynamics out there that are driving the global markets and tying that back to what's happening here in the U.S.
With the Brexit referendum, you said that the meat industry's most immediate concern is effect on currencies. Tell us about that, please.
Sure. So as you mentioned at the onset, that was the already immediate impact was the fluctuation in the markets as well as the currency specifically. And essentially with any big issue out there that introduced new risks into the global marketplace, we tend to see a race to the safe haven currencies. And in this case, and generally, it's the U.S. dollar and also the Japanese yen. And there was immediate strengthening in both of those currencies. At the same time, the biggest decrease was in the British pound. And the euro weakened as well, but by a few percent, where the pound dropped by about 11% against the dollar. And other currencies around Asia besides the yen also weakened initially. And we've luckily seen pretty much stabilization and losses in the key markets for U.S. Beef and pork were just mostly in the 1% to 2% range. And, you know, again, still the strengthening in the yen, which is actually positive for our exports. And the real drop still mostly isolated to that British pound, which would only have really indirect impacts on the U.S. red meat complex.
The U.S. Meat Export Federation's Aaron Bohr joins us again in a moment.
We started doing business in the 60s. I'm a second-generation rancher, and they've been able to stay with us through two generations, been through the ups and downs, and that's why they're successful.
Northwest Farm Credit Services customer Glenn Barrett talks about Farm Credit's 100th anniversary.
It's a great birthday party, and I think 100 years out there just shows that they've had a very successful business plan. There aren't very many businesses that can go through in an agricultural situation the last 100 years.
Northwest Farm Credit Services, here to help you grow.
Key Ag of Murtaugh, Idaho manufactures and markets Dynacure Advanced Hay Conditioner. There's leaf and stem retention and bale weight, forage quality, tied in a package. Applied to the windrow at the 6 to 9 ounce rate, Dynacure keeps hay soft and palatable, enhancing digestibility while adding to your per acre tonnage without breaking the bank. More weight, more quality, more money in your pocket, all await the serious alfalfa producer. Simple to install and calibrate, easy to apply. Dynacure, available from Key Ag. 800-388-3659 or go to keyag.com. Haynes at the Reins, we're discussing Brexit this weekend and what it has to do with the meat trade. And Aaron Bohr with the U.S. Meat Export Federation agreed this was somewhat of a surprise for a vote.
Yes, absolutely. The pollsters were saying that it was going to be close, and we knew that the Leave campaign had gained momentum over the past several weeks leading up to the referendum. But clearly, I think everyone still thought that they would remain, and so it was certainly a shock, and you saw that in the market reaction.
So to some extent, Britain was our gateway to a lot of the parts in the European Union, was it not? I mean, our relationships are really good.
Yeah, for relationships, no, you're exactly right. And that's probably one of our bigger concerns, say, longer term or bigger picture, is that the UK, being our close ally, they obviously think more similar to us. They generally are more welcoming of the science, and we clearly face lots of obstacles in the European market with their bans on hormones and beta agonists and pretty much any technology. And so losing that more science-based sound voice in the UK at the table in the Union is certainly a concern, and especially as we think about TTIP or the Transatlantic Trade Investment Partnership, which obviously faces additional headwinds now, not only possibly losing the UK, but also just the effort that it's going to take to negotiate the actual exit over the next couple of years and necessary focus on that within the EU and, you know, potentially, of course, economic slowdown, which is another obvious worry for us in the meat trade.
Is there some concern about other countries joining the British ship and jumping ship from the EU?
Certainly, and that's been one of the things that, you know, everyone's talking about is the possible domino effect and the fine line that the European Union is going to have to walk in negotiating the exit, because obviously you don't want to work up a deal that is going to have a very negative impact on economic growth within the UK and the European Union. But at the same time, you don't want to be too accommodating and have others say, oh, it's quite easy actually to follow suit and leave. So it's going to be a challenge on all sides to work out, you know, the next phase or what life would look like without the UK being a part.
Is it safe to say we could expect some more tariffication, phytosanitary, sanitary rules coming out of the EU against United States products?
Well, this is where it gets tricky. Business with the EU is complicated already. And, you know, for beef specifically, we're shipping under a duty-free quota that was kind of a result of the hormone case that we won against them in the WTO. And we already have issues there, and specifically with the quota being utilized increasingly by our competitors and Australia and Uruguay. And so this has been on our agenda, if you will, and working with our government to say, how are we going to address this with the European Union? We need to ensure that this duty-free access is for the U.S. and that we can actually grow our business under the quota. And, you know, if what we agreed to was not meant to benefit Australia and Uruguay. And so that's a current issue today. And now, again, you know, what happens? It most likely gets shifted to the back burner. And so possibly not new regulations per se, but, you know, the ability to address our current issues is probably less likely to actually happen and be moved up the priority list.
When you look at global activity, are there some highlights out there, the bright spots that we can let these guys hang their hats on, like Saudi Arabia, for instance, coming back in?
Sure, absolutely. Saudi Arabia is not entirely a done deal, but having the announcement out of Saudi Arabia was encouraging. Hopefully that will, you know, light the fire on getting things done and implementing the program that we will have on this side to ensure that our exports meet Saudi's requirements. And I'd say, you know, for the current real bright spots that we're looking at, you'll see we just got May export data, and so we'll have a release coming out on that soon. But it was a robust month for U.S. beef and pork exports, but let's talk beef specifically, up 12%. And what's happening is we're finally seeing the decrease in Australia's shipments. So they'd, you know, been in drought for the past 2.5-3 years, and their exports finally slowed down about a year ago. And so through the first half of this year, they're running down 18%, and that's allowed us to claw back market share in key markets like Japan and Korea. And at the same time, domestic cattle and beef prices are close to record high in both of those markets. And so they've had smaller domestic beef production. You have smaller supplies out of Australia. And so we're really positioned very well to buy back market share in these key Asian markets. And so that's a definite bright spot. I'd been a bit frustrated with how long it had taken to kind of gain momentum for our exports, but the May data was certainly reassuring. We even saw larger shipments to Mexico, which has been low. You've had the weak peso. You've had historically high beef prices in actually both U.S. and Mexico, which is just limited consumption across the board in Mexico. And so we're starting to see that market come back to life, which is also encouraging. And so, I mean, there are definitely bright spots out there on kind of both the supply as well as the demand side for beef, even though I know it's hard to really see that when we know the cattle price situation today and lots of uncertainty as we move into seeing an actual increase in U.S. beef production after it's been decreasing for the past several years.
Our thanks to Aaron Bohr. Segment 2 on the way at Haynes at the Reins.